Hey, I'm Dave, and you're listening to another episode of Dying to Listen, presented by the Disc Golf Dyers Guild. We have Brian here from Felon Bomb Dyes, so let's see what we learned today. So, welcome. Thanks again for taking time out of your day. The first question I have for you is, how did you come up with your name?
So, my full name is Brian Fellenbaum. I've been told it's German. It sounds German. And from what I've been told, it means fallen tree. So, kind of was thinking about what to name my die page. And everyone's got really cool names. But for me, I was like, well, it'd be cool if it's like, if I could have like a logo with like a disc chopping a tree down, like being thrown. But so that's a lot to put into a logo. So I went with Felon and then like bomb, like throwing bomb drives, like everyone wants to do dies. Tried to keep it simple.
It's interesting to hear some of the backstories of these names and that fallen tree. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little something. I know lots of people have names that mean something, so.
What got you into disc golf?
It's about a year and a half ago now. I was at a friend's bachelor party weekend, and like the last day of the trip, we all went disc golfing. And of course, I was probably the only one who had never played before. And a friend of mine pulled out like a DX starter set. And so I had like AVR, Shark, Leopard, and I think I had a Valkyrie too. And I think that day we played 22 holes, and I think I played plus 29. So it was a struggle, but it was a really fun time. And then from there, it just kind of, you know, it just kind of culminates and builds.
What do you like about disc golf, and what does disc golf mean to you?
I guess for me, I've always kind of liked being outside. I don't think I ever realized that until, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when we all got stuck inside. But how important it is being out and being in nature. And disc golf was kind of this cool thing of being in the woods, going hiking, two things that I really like doing. And, you know, it makes the walk a little bit easier if you're throwing to a target every time.
Yes.
And it's also kind of like a good test against yourself, I guess, if you want to think about it that way. You're always trying to beat your score if you're not trying to beat your friends. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always fun playing with your friends because you're like, you know, can we just do two off the tee or can I do that?
Absolutely. Molly?
So what got you into disc dying?
So a friend of mine, this was probably like 2 or 3 months after I started, a friend of mine, Adam, he had mentioned to me, because he knows that I do art, and he was like, "Hell, if you do art, like you've been doing these acrylic pours, you should check out like disc dyeing because it's really similar, like aesthetic to what you're making." So I went and looked it up, and you know, I've used dye before, and I was like, okay, like, you know, writ dye or whatever. And I looked into some of these things that people were making. It was just crazy. And as a creative person, like whenever I find a hobby, it's fun to like combine that hobby with a new thing. So That's just kind of where it started from. And you just go down those rabbit holes of like, what's possible, what's next.
Yeah. So what is your background? I know you said you were a creative, but What do you do and what do you do for a living?
So my background, I have a fine arts degree with a concentration in painting. That's not really been put to use, I can tell you that. I was kind of one of those kids who, you go to school and people are like, oh, well, you're good at this, so you should go to college for that. And I was like, okay, we'll do that. And people tell you there's jobs out there, and that's a whole other argument and a whole other story. So my background is in arts, fine art, and I've just always been someone who likes making stuff. And so for a living, I actually work in a wood shop. I work in a wood shop. We make cabinetry. And when I say cabinetry, we make speaker cabinets. So if you've ever been to a concert and you've seen those big hanging arrays of speakers, that's the kind of stuff we make. And so from there, it's like being in a place where you make all the time, it just really wants you to make more because you get ideas of what you want to do.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, had another dyer on, actually Happy Tree Dyes, and she does woodworking as well.
Oh, sweet, so yeah.
That is awesome. What do you make cabinets for a specific company of speakers?
Well, so we make our own. It's a company called Claire Brothers, Claire Global. We're probably one of the biggest leaders in our industry. Yeah, I've been there for almost 6 years, I think. But I run our, we have a CNC there that we use to cut panels out because it's not just boxes. We have some pretty complex geometry that we make. But through that, I've been able to learn, modeling with SolidWorks and how to program these things. So once you kind of learn those things, almost anything's on the table of what you can make.
I always wanted to get into 3D stuff, but I never have done that. I mean, the most that I've done is like Tinkercad to do some simple models for 3D printing stuff.
Sure. Yeah, but, like that's something that I've never really been around. So when I've been able to see stuff that's been 3D printed, it's super cool. That there's so much potential there with recycled materials and all that kind of stuff.
So you said you did acrylic pours. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that can definitely tie into the dyeing side of things. Have you used any of your techniques for the acrylic pours into your disc dyeing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I would say that acrylic pours is not my background, but it was something that I was playing around with for probably half a year building up to starting disc dyeing. And the process is almost identical. It's really similar. You use Floetrol, paints, silicone oil, and all the methods that are used for acrylic pouring really work the same thing for cell dyes. I believe last week we talked about all those. There's lots of cell dye artists, there's lots of acrylic pour artists out there who use techniques that all the great cell dyers use. So yeah, it's got a lot of crossover.
And speaking of your beginnings of disc dyeing, do you remember the first disc that you dyed?
Yeah, very well. I tried to dye an XT Nova. That was my first disc. I don't think I ever knew that like anything wouldn't be dyeable. I always thought, well, plastic's like a pretty porous material for certain things, so it should be able to take. But yeah, I remember putting it in the bed and pulling it out like 24 hours later, and I was just like, ready. And I pulled it in, there was literally nothing on the disc except for on the overmold. The overmold took some dye. And I like went on the disc dye Reddit and was like, why won't this dye? And I quickly realized XT is the worst plastic to dye.
Yeah, it's not great.
No,
do you remember what dye did you use and or what type of bed did you use?
So that was back when I'd first started, and like I said before, RIT was like something that I've heard of. So I was like, well, RIT probably makes a dye that's usable. And sure enough, people were like, yep, get RIT, but make sure you get the dye more synthetic. So that's what I went with. And kind of as an artist, you learn to go in on the cheap side first, because mm-hmm. if you really love it, you'll get the better materials later. If you can make it work with the cheap stuff, then it probably doesn't matter for the moment. So my first beds were shampoo and conditioner beds, just because you can get a bottle of those for a dollar each at the Dollar Tree. So cheap and easy way to do it. That was like probably the first couple dyes I tried. And after those, I realized that there really wasn't a whole lot of potential, because I'd seen people get such good dye results with iDye or ProChem, things that use chemical, like, or things that use a mineral spirit basically as their medium, not a water-based thing.
Was there any aha moments that kind of clicked to you that, made your dyes better or more successful than your first dyes?
Definitely looking at other dyers. I had seen some stuff, but just like with art, the more you look, the more inspiration you get. And in a way, you kind of get like this backstory of how they did it. And quickly I realized that, more works. I'd always, in my art, I try to use very minimal materials and just kind of build up. It's cost effective and makes your materials last longer. Mm-hmm. So I tried, using more dye. And that did definitely work until I accidentally took the stamp off of one of my discs because I didn't let it air out for long enough. Luckily, I learned a lot of lessons quick and on my own discs.
Yeah, again, that's the best way to learn is actually make the mistakes yourself. Yes. Speaking of learning and inspiration, where did you get your inspiration from and your learnings?
Definitely looked at I looked at Daddy Mac Dyes a lot when I first started. I think for me, like what drew me to his stuff was he used a lot of negative space and like the disc color for a lot of his designs, because he was doing that like kind of river table look. So that was definitely a pull for me. They just always look super clean and kind of a lot like watercolor poured on stuff, which is, you know, that's primarily kind of how I work in my art. So him, of course, Happy Tree Dyes, her stuff is super good. Like the saturation that some of these people are able to get with their dyes is just, it just boggles my mind sometimes. And when you pull a disc like that, you're like, how did I do that? And let me do that again, please.
Yes. I guess, what's the hardest part about dyeing?
I think the hardest part about dyeing is knowing when to stop. Like, knowing how complicated to make it. Because you can quickly make something really muddy and really messy and really dark. And as a disc golfer, you don't want any of those on your discs, because you're not going to find them. They're not going to look cool. So trying to find that balance is tough, because I've definitely made a lot of dark, muddy dyes before.
Yeah, I find it interesting when you said that you use more. I'm assuming you didn't necessarily use more colors, but just more of the dye to get what
yes.
you need.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was a big thing. Like I would, like in the beginning, I would use one or two drops of dye maybe. Mm. And I don't flood the bed with dye, but I definitely go back over where I've put dye before with similar colors. And yeah, that makes saturation just instantly better, having more there.
So what dye methods have you done and or experimented with?
I've done the shampoo beds, which you can get really good results with shampoo beds and conditioner beds if you know what you're doing. I've done some shaving cream dyes, but I've always gotten really faded, kind of fuzzy results. Again, you can do great results with those. You can get great results with shaving cream. Of course, I've done clear glue. That's probably my most common, is clear glue beds. I've been working through cell dyes, but one big thing that I've noticed is if you don't get your colors right, you can just instantly, like I said, turn your bed into a big puddle of mud. And that's kind of a lot of material to waste and do it wrong.
Yeah.
And then I've done some hot stamps. I've been trying those out lately. That's been kind of fun, using the Cricut to make some pretty cool stencils. I can't think of anything else that I haven't tried yet. One thing that I actually really want to try, the guy Andy Dyes, who does those gradients around like the rims, I would love to learn how to do those and probably mess up like 15 discs in the process. But
have you done any spin dyeing?
Yeah, I have tried spin dyes. Again, they get muddy. There's such an amount of control that you got to have. Mm-hmm. And I think I just don't have that smooth, repetitive motion down. Because some of those guys, like even the difference is doing it. He shows how steady he can get his hand to kind of go over the same swirl like 15 times or whatever. I can't get that pattern down.
Yeah. The even circles, that's easy to do. The lollipop spins, yeah. I cannot do that. That's
nope.
That's yeah. damn near impossible.
I can add a spin to the rim of a disc if that's what you're asking. But other than that, no.
Yeah. Shameless plug. I can send you Dave's spin die jig rig if you don't have one yet.
I do not have one. I've been trying to. I do have like a jig, but it doesn't work for world discs. Sometimes yes. they're on there crooked for some reason. I've seen your design and I like your design. I think that's a great one.
Well, I will send it to you and you can give me your honest feedback.
Absolutely. I will make use of that. I'll maybe make a couple videos on it because I want to see how it works for me.
Awesome. And speaking of accessories, is there one dye accessory that you cannot live without?
Probably like an underrated one for me is I have like a Lazy Susan that I use while I'm putting dye in my beds. So rather than work just on like a flat table with my bed, I'll put that on the Lazy Susan so that when I'm dying, I can quickly get, you know, spin that around, get to where I need to work. And it makes when you want to blow into your beds like a lot easier to kind of maneuver. It's really simple, but like that really makes the experience just a little bit more fluid and smooth for me.
Yeah. Have you, one, noticed any experiences when you spin it too fast that messes up the design?
Yes.
And or two, use that to your advantage?
Yes, as well. Yeah, definitely both are possible. So when I spin those, I'm kind of just like giving it a gentle nudge around, and that's plenty. But it is useful to get some spins. Although if I want like a swirl design, I'll kind of just take my bed and just kind of tilt it around, and that'll get it like gravity moving it instead of just centripetal force.
What tool/device do you use to blow your glue beds?
Essentially a straw. I don't forget what it's called, but it's kind of like a piece of plastic tubing. I got an Ace. I've got a couple of them just in case, you know, they get dye all over them, they get yucky. I do want to get a compressor. I've been thinking about those literally since like probably like the fifth or sixth time I used one. I was like, man, that would be great. But I think the more you do, like sometimes I'll do like 5 or 6 up to 8 beds in one go, like in one evening. And by the end of those, you're feeling pretty tired. But it's almost like training. You're like training your breath to be a little bit better.
Yeah, I want to get a compressor as well. And I still haven't found a good straw type that doesn't exhaust me of where I want to pass out.
Yeah.
So still looking for that.
It's tough finding like the right diameter.
Yeah.
Because if you get too small, you're not getting enough air through. If you get too big, you're just blowing all your air out in one shot.
Yeah. I think the thing that I'm currently using is a syringe tube, like a larger syringe tube that works. So if someone saw a disc, what would you say that your method or signature style is?
I don't feel like I have one yet. Like I said before, Daddy Max kind of, he is like the guy that does the river table dyes, you know. Emily is the girl who does the star dyes. Gary's the guy who does the painted tree dyes. I've been trying to do like a lot of these like tri star dyes like this. I really like how these come out. They're not overly complicated. They're kind of clean, but I really like how those come out. So maybe if someone saw those, they'd be like, oh, that's that guy. But I guess we all kind of like, you know, as artists or makers, we all copy from other people. Some not intentionally, but like you take inspiration from everywhere and all the people around you. But it is like a very strange thing of what makes your stuff yours versus someone else, I guess. So finding that voice is tough.
It is. You know, there's only so much you can do, and you probably heard this saying, you know, great artists steal. So, I just like in songwriting, there's really no original songs anymore. Everybody has done it.
Absolutely.
But it's fun to experiment and try different styles and techniques to see what you come up with. Cause the possibilities are endless for that. So you like to do the glue beds. Do you have any tips or tricks for people for that?
So I do clear glue. I've tried using white glue. It gives a very different look. And I think what someone mentioned to me was that white glue, there's a property, but I don't remember what it's called. But basically what the white glue will absorb the dye. It'll take on the dye. Whereas clear glue will just kind of hold it. So when you put a disc in a white bed with dye in it, most of it's probably going to the glue, not the disc. So it'll probably give you like more of a pastel look. But in terms of clear glue beds, one thing that I was asked about was, how do you get bubbles out? And I still get bubbles all the time. But one thing I found is, definitely after you pour it, let it sit for like 5-10 minutes. And those bubbles, if there's any, should have risen to the top by then. And then another trick that I found, and I think this was on a Difference Is Doing It video, using denatured alcohol in like a little spritz bottle. If you just spray that on top, it will pop any bubbles on the surface as long as they can touch them. And that's been a great way to get rid of bubbles for clear.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've also seen and personally used a water. And the water just...
Oh, yeah. Water should work too. Yeah.
I feel like it breaks the surface tension. I don't know if that's what it does, but yeah.
That sounds about right.
Have you noticed that... when you let that bed sit to get those bubbles, that you get the glue, I guess, curing or hardening with like a thin layer of film?
I think, yeah, ever so slightly, it will start to do that. So if that's the case, maybe not wait that long. It's actually really weird. So I've usually used the Elmer's clear glue just because it's what I've found. And I've actually found it's like, in terms of different brands, the most consistent, like from batch to batch that I get. But recently I couldn't get any in time, so I went to Hobby Lobby and bought their jug they have. And I've used it before, and I found that it's very thick. Like it's almost hard to blow any designs into it. This batch, super runny, which threw me for a loop when I poured it. Like one bump and it like sends the whole thing sliding over. That is tough. So maybe if you want it to be thicker, leave it sit longer. But I haven't noticed it creating like a skin or hardening on top too much. Definitely with heat though, that'll do it nice and well.
What mixture do you use for the dye to put on the glue bed?
I believe I use pretty much all my mixtures are what's on the Difference Is Doing It. He has a video about like what's in all of his mixtures. And I've found that that's actually worked really well for me. I want to say it's like 1 to 2 ounces per quarter teaspoon, something like that. I don't know.
I don't know offhand, but it's somewhere. Yes.
Yeah. It exists. And if you search for it, lots of people have great recommendations, but I recommend that as a starting point. If anyone's not sure what to use, that's probably one of the best places to start.
So what dye and or medium do you use in that mixture?
So normally I'm using pretty much all Pro Chem. That's just kind of what I started with. I know that some people say like they got Worm Dip because it was available in stores. I feel like they could find that pretty easily. I did try to find Worm Dip at like an Ace in their fishing section, because I think that's used for fishing lures. I couldn't find any there. So that's when I started looking online, and they had their starter kit, which I was like, well, I'm trying to stay cheap, so we're going to go with the starter kit and see how that goes. And I still have, you know, a year and a half later, I still have dye from that starter kit that I haven't broken out, like I haven't used up. But yeah, since then, definitely invested in some more colors, and I think I'm at a good place with that. I have not used much eye dye other than hot dips. Yeah, and like I said, I tried RIT. I don't know. I think it's just so hard when you have a water-based product to get that to want to last. It's just solvent-based stuff is just so much more permanent in a way. So,
and I feel like with the glue beds and your dye mixture, can go a long way because you don't use a whole lot of it necessarily compared to some other dyeing methods. So,
oh yeah, man, there's some bottles that I haven't filled up since I started them, and which is awesome. But it also then, because of that, makes you be like, okay, well, if I want to do a Floetrol bed, you know, I've got plenty and I'm not going to run out anytime soon, so I can go ahead and try that. But Floetrol, the most like used thing is the medium itself. So
for your glue beds, do you use any heat, and or how long do you let the disc sit in there?
For me, I will use heat if I'm going to be home, like if I'm going to be home and I'm spend like an afternoon or a day working on dyes, I'll use heat, and I have like two heat lamps mounted just like above where my beds would be. And I had bought a set that came with like two thermometers, like that you would put in like a terrarium. Mm-hmm. So you can make sure you have a good heat and it's not too hot or too cold. So I found out what was about 100 degrees, like that distance, and then that's just where they're at. I would say it's at least 15 inches, but it depends on the strength of your heat lamps. I can't remember that off the top of my head. Yeah. If I do heat, then I'll do 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours with heat, and then I'll do like 1 hour without, and they're pretty much ready to pool. But if I don't want to use heat, I've actually found that if you go 8 to 9 hours room temp, I've gotten really good saturation. Now, I don't think that'll work so great with, you know, obviously neon dyes. You need heat for those. Mm-hmm. And some of those lighter colors, like I've noticed Caribbean just doesn't show up without heat.
Interesting.
Although I've heard that one maybe just needs more dye in the mixture. That's what I remember Chris from Daddy Max said, that he goes a little heavier on that mixture than the other ones.
And speaking of dye taking and saturation, do you have a favorite type of plastic that you like to dye?
Like I kind of dye a lot of the same makes and molds and brands that I have in my own bag. So I dye a lot of Innova, Discraft. So probably Star and ESP are my two biggest. I do really like dyeing, you know, of course, K1 is amazing, and Neutron plastic is super nice too. I dyed a soft Neutron Envy. It looks so pretty. Like, I've never seen a disc be so shiny, but also so full of color. Even their prism plastic is pretty nice too, if you can find it in like that silvery color.
So, yeah.
Or plasma, I think it's called, yeah.
Have you noticed, I would say, excess fading on the ESP plastic?
I don't think I've noticed any. I do notice certain colors wanting to fade on any disc. Like, I think bright blue can, like, ProChem has a color called bright blue. It's very interesting when it takes to your disc, it'll look really opaque. Like, it'll look blotchy, like really solid. Not like deep, how like some other colors will look. I've noticed that fading. And to your point about like discs or dye fading on discs, I remember a comment might have been the last episode that was out, about this weird texture on mm-hmm. some discs, like with cell dyes. I have felt that too. And I don't know what it is. It almost feels like it's always usually the first disc I pull from that bed. Never any of the other ones. So part of me wonders if it's like some of the powder hasn't dissolved fully, and it's like baking onto the top of the disc. But it's really, really weird.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you have any weird commission requests that stuck out to you at all?
Thankfully, no. I have not had many commission requests. I've had commission requests for, you know, just, hey, I've got this disc, can you throw some dye on it? I'm like, yeah, sure, I can do that. I don't think I've gotten to the point. I definitely sell more from stuff I've made than commissions. Commissions are tough. I always feel a ton of pressure, even if it's they're like, oh, I don't, whatever you want. And I'm like, that's even worse. Like, I don't have a prompt now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I haven't gotten any weird ones yet. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. Do you like to keep the stamp or do you like to wipe it?
I like keeping the stamp, especially if I find like some nice ones. Discraft has some really cool ghost stamps at the moment. I'll keep those. Those look amazing. Anything that's like holographic or got like some kind of sub effect on the stencil or on the stamp, like hearts or patterns or anything like that, I'll keep those. There are some stamps though that I'm just like, I don't like. I dyed a boatman for a friend of mine, and the only boatman I could find was their Halloween edition from last year, which, if you're like horror films and you like the Halloween stuff, you probably love it. but it was just like, it was just a little too much. Some of those stamps look like kids' toys. Those ones you can wipe.
So when you do wipe the stamp, how do you wipe it? And are there any color stamps and or disc brands that you find difficult to wipe?
I would agree with a lot of people in that Innova is probably the easiest to wipe, at least lately. Hmm. Those stamps seem to come off on their own, really, without any without any coaxing. Mm-hmm. I've tried a couple of methods. I mean, I've obviously done the magic eraser one because people have done it by accident. I've done it by accident. But I've found there's a lot more rubbing involved. You don't get any residue left over usually from the stamp. Mm-hmm. But what I've taken to lately is just acetone with paper towel. Do a bunch, like kind of flood it. Like you want it to be wet, because if you let it dry, it'll kind of, that stamp will like seep into the plastic and you'll have a slightly pink disc afterward, or whatever color you have.
No, I tried the magic eraser. I'm like, this is taking too long. Yes, you can do it, but it was just taking too long. I want something that goes really fast. So just basically dip the disc in acetone. But I've had a few instances where the top laminate of the plastic to start peeling up.
I could see that.
So got to be careful with that. I can't remember what specific plastic that was. I think it was Innova plastic, but when you wipe your stamps, you do have to be slightly careful sometimes.
Yeah, that is a good point. Like, also obviously wear gloves and be in a well-ventilated area, because acetone will dry your hands out super fast. I know, because I've spilled it at work on myself, and it's not fun.
Yeah, well, you're a better man than me. I wear no gloves and a confined space.
I mean, usually I'll try to have a window open, but there's only so much you can do in a small room with like no ventilation.
So where do you purchase your discs to dye?
I probably do almost all my purchasing online, only because I don't have too many disc places around me. Hmm. Probably the biggest one that I have to buy discs is a Play It Again. And they actually have a pretty good selection, but they tend to be, you know, there's not a whole lot white there. I'll go there every now and then and find some nice white plastic. And I'll dye other colors than white. I mean, there's some nice colors out there, but it's usually always like red, dark blue, green. And I'm like, no, we don't want any of those.
Not a great canvas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, perfect. Perfect for a disc golfer. Bright green disc. That one's not so bad, actually. But actually, like, there's a hardware store around me. It's an Ace. They actually have a super good disc golf section. Like, they recently just started getting Castoplast in, and I'm like, how is a hardware store getting Castoplast? But apparently one of their guys is, like, really into disc golf, so he's, like, pushing for that, which is cool. But, yeah, I shop pretty much all online.
Huh, Ace Hardware. I would never imagine that.
I know. This Ace is pretty good. And it's like literally a quarter mile from my work. So even today I stopped in and was like, where's the Castoplast? And they're like, oh, we haven't unboxed it yet. I was like, okay, never mind.
Can you go in the back and unbox it, please?
Yes, please. Could I see that?
What are your some of your go-to online stores that you like to go to?
I think Infinite is probably the most popular for me, mostly because they frequently have clearance or discs on sale. And even the stuff that they don't consider to be on sale still is discounted. Like, you can get a couple bucks off, and, you know, a dollar here and a dollar there if you're buying 50 discs is, you know, it's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of money saved. And I like that you can see, you know, at least like you can get a general idea of what color am I picking? What stamp am I looking at? I do like them. I haven't had any issues. That being said, I haven't bought discs in a while, mostly because I've got too much else going on, and sitting on, you know, 40 discs is it's a bit of a money pit.
Yeah, as I look over at the over 100 white discs that I have.
I mean, it is the dream. I'm not lying.
Well, you know, you see a good deal, it's cheap, might as well get it.
Absolutely.
It's now I'm like, well, they're too good. I don't want to mess them up. I don't want to, you know, waste them.
that's the other hard, that's like talking of hard things, like that's probably the other hard thing is like, oh, which one do I want to die today? Like, and you're like, oh, I'll save that one for when I'm better or yeah. something.
That day will never happen.
Yeah, yeah, it won't happen. Just go for it. Send it.
So where is your die station or where is your setup?
Up until very recently, it was, you know, in my bedroom, which is kind of where my studio was. But we actually just bought a place. I'm sitting in what will be the studio, but all the white walls right now are pretty bare. So I've got like a table built, but that's all we have at the moment.
Nice.
But it will be here. This will be the creative room, and I'm so thankful to finally have that space.
That is awesome. Just wait till you drop one of your dies, and you'll have some color on the floor and walls.
That is coming, and oh man, I'm not prepared for that. I'm not prepared.
Have you had any accidents yet?
Probably the worst I've had is trying to clean off like a Floetrol bed with like teal and pansy in it, which are like two of the worst dyes to get on your hands because they will not come out. Mm-hmm. Have I spilled a bed yet?
Knock on wood.
I know I've got some here. I don't think I have. But yeah, it's coming. It's got to be. It'll happen, and it happens to everyone. The next part will be finding like where to clean them because we've got a beautiful, nice white farm sink now, and the bathroom sink is white. So something tells me I'm going to need a shop sink outside.
Yeah. Do you have a basement?
No, we do not. So we're like a townhome.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah. I have a nice sink in my kitchen. I'm like, I'm not using that. Yeah, it's a white farmhouse sink. That's. Yep. I'm pretty sure if any dye gets on there, it will die. So I use my utility sink in the basement. So.
No, that's smart. My plan for the moment is going to be two basins, one that's clean soapy water and one that's other soapy water. Just try to like get them downstairs, get them outside, clean them there, and then just be able to rinse them. So we'll see how that goes because. Yeah, I've thought about it. I'm like, this could pose some interesting challenges.
Yeah. And speaking of cleaning your disc, do you do any special process after you dye your disc?
Other than washing them out in the sink with some soapy water, that's all I do on any normal dye. If I do like a spin, I definitely try to let that dry for a little bit and use like not an abrasive sponge. But they make those blue sponges that are one side of the sponge and the other side has like kind of like a scuff pad. I'll use that to kind of wipe around the edges and try to pull up any loose dye. Because already I've like had them in a stack and one slipped and it's put a nice big scuff on one of the discs. I'm like, well, should have washed them sooner, I guess.
Yeah, I remember I did a spin die and I put that disc in my bag and it was a bottom spin and it left a mark on the other disc that it was resting on. So yes. I now clean them to the best I can. And recently for my spin dies, I let them sit for a while. Then I take a cotton swab and isopropyl alcohol, 91%, I believe. And I just quickly wipe it off to get any excess dye off. So
that's the next method that I want to try. Just because I have seen that it works. Like, do you notice it fades at all? Like it wants to pull off too much?
You know, it can. So I only lightly do it. And I mean, it ever so slightly may not be as saturated, but, I mean, you can get carried away with it and do it too much, but.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's better that it doesn't come off in someone's bag on another disc or on any of your finished discs. So,
or a friend's hand because that happened.
Oh, really?
that morning we spun dye a disc and was like, yeah, let's go play. And he took it out and it was like his hand was all black. I'm like, oh, I probably should have cleaned that up.
Oh, no.
So lesson learned there. So if you had to start disc dyeing today, is there anything that you would do differently now that you know what you know?
Honestly, no. Like you said, failure is the best way to learn anything. Thankfully, I haven't had like any huge failures or anything like that. I know that I have made definite mistakes. One thing that I would definitely recommend, and this is probably just like life advice, but if you ever get the chance to like promote yourself, if you want to promote yourself as a disc dyer, make sure if people are interested that you either have it in writing or that what's going on is actually legit. Because getting screwed sucks and no one needs that.
If you want, can you explain a little bit about what happened or your situation?
Sure. So I think, do you know about like the Jarrett Orr situation that happened with the Running It with Nate Sexton podcast? This would have been like 2.5 months ago, maybe.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes. So I was one of those people who got tricked. And you know what? Looking back at it, totally, totally my fault. Like, yeah, I should have easily like thought more about this. But looking back at it, this was a podcast that like I had listened to a lot. It was co-hosted by Nate Sexton. Other people had done lots of stuff with that podcast. So when I was approached by it, it sucked because we were going away on a trip that day. And we were going to be in the car for 3 hours. So I was trying to like, my fiance was like helping me text and like find out information, what was going on. And he was like, yeah, we'll do it. Like we'll do 5 spots on the show. It'll be $1,000, you know? And like when you think about it in terms of advertising for yourself, $1,000 doesn't seem like too bad, especially not to be on, like to be on that kind of a platform. You know, I thought about it and I'm thinking it now, like we had these moments where we were driving and like, we were like, all right, we got to send payment and stuff. And we're trying to send payment and my payment wasn't going through because I had to re-sign into stuff. And my fiance is like, it's still giving you a shot. Like she was saying this joking. She's like, it's still giving you a shot to not do it. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's kind of weird. Yeah. And then I woke up and like after it was after it happened, you know, I had like this kind of weird feeling myself. I was just like, man, I hope like this works out, or I hope this is legit and all that stuff. And then the next morning, I remember I still had that feeling. And I remember we were out, we had been driving around, we went to Watkins Glen, and then we were going to some wineries. And I was looking something up on the disc golf Reddit. I literally got to the page and it just said controversy with the Running It with Nate Sexton podcast. And I was like, no, no. Oh, so like I started reading and I'm like, my heart sank. It sucked.
Yeah.
And so I basically was in the back of a car processing all this while everyone's like driving and talking and stuff. And a friend of mine who I talked to about it, he texted me and was like, please tell me you didn't send any money. And I was like, yep. You know, I got talking, I got finding like, what can I do? Is there a way to cancel this payment? Is there a way to have any accountability? Well, already within this time, the podcast page had been essentially deleted. Jarrett Orr he wasn't following anyone or didn't have any followers, had no posts on his account. And someone had reached out and was like, if this happened, like go message Nate and see if he can get anything done. So we did. And it took a while. Like I literally sat on that for like probably 2 weeks. Before Nate was like, all right, I think I have a plan of action. And apparently he's like, I talked to Jarrett and he said that he'll give money back. And I was like, okay, let's see. And about a week and a half went by and he was like, yeah, I still haven't heard anything. So like, do you have any ideas? Like, what would you think? In the end, I think the very next day he was like, I talked to some people and basically I want to just pay you guys out what you're out. I don't know if anyone else had, you know, paid $1,000, but even still, if he had to pay all that money out, that shouldn't have been on him. But dude, Nate Sexton is the real deal. You know, I wasn't expecting any of that. So, you know, and $1,000 really isn't that much when you think about it, but yeah, just don't let the stars get to you and the greed, or if it's just like the aspiration get to you. Just do what you do because you love it, and the things that you want to happen will come naturally, like over time.
Yeah, I didn't know you were involved with that. That's crazy. it really sucks that it happened, but it's also, again, a great learning experience. And you know, it can humble yourself, like you said, not to be greedy and try to get to the top the fast way or whatever. It's, if you're passionate about it, people will know that. And you know, doors were open for you because of that. Yes. I'm not doing this because, you know, I want to be famous or whatever. It's a lot of freaking work to do this.
As we saw earlier.
Yes. And my main goal is just trying to give back to the dying community in any way that I can and in unique ways. So yeah, I feel like you have some PTSD when I asked you, hey, do you want to be on a podcast or something like that?
So it did go through my mind. It definitely went through my mind, because also within that time, like, I'm not saying, oh, people are reaching out to me, but like, yeah, I had some other people reach out about stuff, and I was just like, okay, this time we're taking it slower.
Yes.
And this also, it involves nothing for me in terms of money or anything like that. So, and like, that's the stupid thing about it is like, I've seen like, my grandma has been scammed. Like, it's not her fault, but like, she's been not scammed, but very close to being scammed. Mm. And I look at these things and I'm like, man, like, how could you fall for that? But this situation to me was just like, it's the guy. It's not like written in some terrible format that you're like, okay, a fifth grader wrote this. It has his phone number on it. It's on the official page. Cause that was the thing that got my dad. I like told him what happened and he was just like, oh man, I'm so sorry. And I was like, yeah, it sucks. And he's like, so someone hacked him. And I was like, no, it's the other co-host on the show that did it. And that's what blew his mind. I was like, yeah, I feel really bad for Nate that he had to go through that, because I think it what weekend was that? It was some big tournament was going on, and regardless of it, he's, you know, he's presenting, he's commentating. Mm. So yeah, just make sure to think things through.
Yes. Also, you owe me $1,000 to be on this podcast before it gets released.
Oh shoot. you already got my social security and everything.
Yes. Just need your firstborn child and we'll be good to go.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. And, yeah, a very interesting story. So
it is interesting. And like I said, there's other people involved in that. And I've heard nothing from any of them, but it is weird. Like within the subtext of that post that I saw on Reddit, a lot of people were saying, you know, there was a guy from, they had a couple sponsors that had been on, and they were just like, yeah, we were on, and whenever we had to deal with Nate, it was all fine. It was all good. But we always had this weird feeling when we worked with Jarrett for some reason. Hmm. So, I mean, if you know those things, if you knew what you knew now, yeah, it would have been like, eh, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Talk to me when it's not costing me so much or something. I don't know.
All right. Well, I can't think of a good segue to get out of this segment. So we'll just do a hard cut here.
Awesome.
Shout out session. Are there any dyers? I know you mentioned a few, but are there any other dyers that you want to give a shout out that you like their work or anything?
Well, definitely all the people that I've been involved with over the two Way So Groovy competitions that I've done. Both group conversations with those tournaments was full of, you know, friendly banter, memes, late conversations, advice. So that's when I'm saying, like, no matter what's going on, there's always, the majority of people out here are great people and want to be here. I can't name them all off the top of my head. And I know they've been named 1,000 times, but just all you that have have been involved in that, like, thank you for accepting me, because I've never thought of myself as like one of the dyers or anyone like that. I've just been someone who likes to dye discs. So
yeah, it is quite amazing and humbling how welcoming the dyeing community is. And I am appreciative for the Wave So Groovy tournaments, because I think the best part about the tournament was the group chat. Yeah. And I feel like relationships with other dyers have been built with that. So but thanks again, Wave So Groovy, for doing that.
Yes, thank you so much. You rock.
So we'll get to know you on a little bit of a more personal level and do some of your favorite faves. The cool. First question I have is, who is your favorite band and do you have a favorite song?
Probably my favorite band. I listen to a lot of different music, but one band that stuck with me for a long time has been Coldplay. And I never discovered them until I was probably like just out of high school, which would have been like 2012. Yeah, I just like, I can sink into their albums. I mean, like their latest stuff is okay, but they still have music that I love listening to, and I'll put on if I need something to cheer me up, or if I need something to like get me in the groove, get me singing, whatever. But yeah, I listen to a lot of music. I'll listen to instrumental. I'll listen to like video game music is great. Lo-fi stuff is really good for dying. Just kind of gets you in like this headspace of working. And yeah. Even to that point, I'll listen to podcasts. I'll listen to audiobooks. Definitely different things. Well, as long as I have something on, I think I'm able to get in that zone.
Yeah, I feel like music has that special quality that can get you into a creative mood or zone. It's definitely, sounds lame, but has some magical powers.
Oh, I definitely think so. Like going through school, I know, and you hear this and you're like, yeah, whatever. But like, I was always told like instrumental music is really what you want to listen to as an artist, like, because instrumental music is not full of lyrics. It's not full of like left brain stuff. If you think that way, like instrumental is all the notes and the sound and how it feels. And while lyrics obviously offer more to the music, they can sometimes pull you away. And I think I could agree with that, but I've never seen like, oh, I have to listen to instrumental or I have to listen to vocals. So
yeah, no, I have to listen to Mozart when I die.
Yes.
You know, just to
only whale sounds as my studio, as my painting studio would do.
All right. Your favorite food?
Definitely sushi. I feel like other people have said that, but that's like a recent thing. I mean, maybe that's just like a recent fad that we're having here in the United States, but like, yeah, super good. Like it doesn't feel too filling, you know, it's super, feels healthy at least, but I love like the flavors that you get.
Yeah.
And like once you can get past, even if you don't like raw sushi, once you can get past that, like whatever that fishiness of it is, it's super good.
Do you have any favorite restaurants or places you like to go to get your sushi? I can't say that word. Sushi fix.
Sushi. Yeah, I have a couple. We actually used to have a place that did really good like poke bowls. They closed down, I think, at the end of lockdown, or probably like in the last 6 to 8 months, which sucks, but they were really good. I have some other small sushi places. Definitely go to small places. Like they're going to probably have your best sushi. Not some big chain places, but
yeah, I recently saw something that specific like to Chinese restaurants. Don't go to a Chinese restaurant that has 5 stars. It's going to have bad food. Get one or go to one that has 3 stars.
Yes. Because
it's going to be shitty service, but amazing food.
Oh my God. Yeah. What you're paying for there is the food. Don't like, I feel like maybe here in the States, we put too much emphasis on service. Like, I don't care. As long as I get some food and I get to eat, that's all that matters to me.
Yes. What is your favorite beverage?
If we're talking alcoholic beverages, I don't drink a ton, but I really like cider. I'm a big cider drinker. I like sour beers. I know someone had mentioned them before. So I like fruity drinks a lot. So those are super good.
as do I, even though it's not as manly, but boy, how do they taste good.
Oh my God. Yeah. So much. So good. Like, who cares about that? That's trope. And I totally, I totally sympathize. I know you said that you're on keto. My fiance, she really likes keto, I think, because she's found with like other diets or even just eating regular, like just a normal whatever diet, that carbs just really disagree with her in terms of skin. I think she just feels a lot better when they're not in her diet. So while she would love to have, you know, a drink or a cider all the time, she knows that it's probably best for her not to. And that's why I don't really drink a whole lot either.
Yeah, again, I haven't had a beer in forever. So whiskey it is.
Hey, that's fine too.
What other hobbies do you have?
Outside of work, I'm someone who just likes to make all the time. I like whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Art, you know, for like stuff for around the house. Right before, this would have been actually 2018, I had some wooden, I had some like scraps of wood at work, and it was coming up on Halloween. I was like, I'm a Harry Potter guy. And I was like, oh, it'd be kind of cool to like make a wand or whatever. So I made a wand, and it actually turned out really cool. I was like really happy with it. And someone asked me, like, oh, could you make me one too? So I made them a wand. And then like within probably 3 or 4 weeks, I had like 5 or 6 people asking me to make wands. So before I was just dying, I was a wand maker. So I'd make those. I'm a really big Formula One fan, so I watch Formula One when it's on. It's going to be a race this weekend, so that'll be fun. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just that kind of maker person who just, whatever it is, like, doesn't matter. I want to make something.
That is awesome. I'm kind of the same way as well.
Yeah.
If you're still making the wands, my wife would love one.
Okay. I'll plug it at the end so you can know where to go.
Yes. All right. Next section. If you had to pick 3 discs for the rest of your life to play any course, what would those 3 discs be?
So for putter, I'm probably, like, I want to say Luna just because it feels really good, but man, the price of Lunas lately is insane. So I'm going to say Pure, because very similar kind of disc. I really like that as like a pure, as a nice throwing disc. Buzz, kind of similar, both straight flying discs with some fade on the end. And then a Leopard 3. They're super comfortable in my hand. You can get some that flip. You can get some of the more stable runs that just go straight for a while and then dump out on you at the end. So that'd probably be it.
Nice. Do you have a favorite disc?
So probably like one of my first favorite discs was an Innova Mirage. Actually, that's this one here. This disc, it's not one that I see very often. And when I found it, I was like, whoa, I've never seen a disc like this. It's like super thin. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very flippy putter. That is like one of my favorite discs to throw. I feel like it probably won't be for very long because it's super flippy, but very good beginner disc. I wish I had found it sooner.
So when you play around, how many discs do you bring with you and how many do you actually use?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I was just counting the other day. I think I have, counting putters, I have like my putting putters, I have 20. And of those discs, I probably use like 60%. So probably like 12 of those discs. Some of those are like mostly like I have the same disc in a different mold or in a different weight or a different plastic just for different conditions. But yeah, I try to use everything because then sometimes I'm just like, why do I even have this if I'm not using it?
Yeah, no, gear buying syndrome is real for me.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I've been getting into lighter weight discs and it's been helping my noodle arm. And I've also been getting into using or getting the same mold, but different weights, because those do, I've been finding fly slightly different. So
yeah, they definitely do. I have like So what I like throwing putters in mids, and I really like the Mako 3 as like an understable option compared to your Buzz. But I have a Halo. I have a Halo Mako 3 that doesn't fly. Like it's almost, it's kind of stable, to be honest with you. Like it goes out flat, but it will want to fade at the end. Whereas I have a Champion Mako 3, and even though Champion's kind of stable plastic, I have it in a lighter weight, and that thing will turn great to the right for me. So yeah, that's a, it's super nice to have a lighter weight disc. And hopefully what happens is by the time your flippy one, your lighter weight one either becomes too flippy and unusable that your other one has cycled in. That's yes. Something I'm still trying to do. I haven't been playing long enough to be able to get to that point though.
No, same here. And I feel like it's becoming to that turning point now that I have been playing long enough. I've been playing long enough now to actually see a disc flight change based on how beat in it is, which is quite interesting.
I think you've graduated. Yeah.
Yeah. Yay. Confetti. Poof.
It could just be like me. Like usually what happens to me is I end up losing that disc before it ever gets the chance to season in.
So, speaking of losing discs, I've never permanently lost one. Last weekend I got a call. I played a course in the Superior Duluth area, in October of 2020 or 2021. And someone finally followed it and called me. I was like, yes, my record of not permanently losing a disc is still intact.
Wow. That's amazing. And congratulations. I'm sure you still have bought many discs to replace it in the meantime, though.
Yes. And
I have, just definitely.
Many other discs in general.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite course that you've played and or hole?
I have, like, in terms of famous courses, I have played Idlewild, which was a lot of fun. It was a challenge. This was back in the summer, and it was still, was really humid, and the course was kind of unkempt, I'm going to be honest. Certain fairways were very high with grass, but it was really cool playing some of those like iconic holes that you see on coverage, you see throws play, and you're just like, oh my God, I fived a hole, like this guy throws no problem on a three or whatever. That was cool. But in terms of courses that I play a lot, we have a course called Muddy Run Disc Golf Course here in Lancaster, PA. And that course is like a really good mix of open holes, tight holes, elevated holes. So that's probably my favorite course. Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you have any courses on your bucket list?
Yeah. Maple Hill would be amazing. I think that's on everyone's. Eagles Crossing, I think it would be fun to play too, just because I've seen, those are like, I think the similarity between those two is definitely the views, the location, you know, the beauty of just the course itself makes you want to play there. But I would also really like to play, I feel like I've seen this more of like, not urban golf, but in more of like an industrial place. Cause I've like out here, we have like farmland, woods. That's about what we play in. We actually don't have too many park golf courses, but, yeah, like maybe something closer to a city. That would be kind of interesting.
That reminds me, I've seen some YouTube videos of basically guerrilla style golf where you bring a portable basket into the city and make up your own course.
Yeah, I have seen those. I think I actually have seen that. I've heard some bad stories about discs through windows, but yeah, maybe just keep it away from buildings for the time being.
All right, next section, dream date. If you had to pick a pro disc golfer to hang out with and or play around, who would that be?
Well, I'm partial to Nate Sexton because of his generosity and who he is as a person. I think he would be a super cool guy to chill with, to play on the course. I think he's someone that no matter how good or bad you are, he'll always have some kind of feedback to be like, yeah, you're doing that, keep doing that, or this is what you got to do to get better. In terms of like, that'd be in terms of like MPO. FPO, I think I think Kristen Tatar would be a really fun person to play around with. She seems like a super grounded person. I know she's quiet, but I feel like she's got a lot going on, like in terms of how she thinks and approaches life. So, you know, even beyond disc golf, I think she would have some great words to share.
All right. So Felon Bomb Dies is going to be putting up a disc for raffle. So if you want to help a starving artist, you can win his amazing die for only $1. It's only $1. Do you want to explain a little bit about that disc?
So this is a Streamline Pilot, pretty common disc, but from what I've heard, these fly really well. I personally haven't, only because I've already got a disc that does what this does in my bag, but I wanted to get something that had kind of the style that I've been doing lately, that I think this one came out really nice. So definitely want to see someone win this one.
You know, since I switched my bag to MVP/Axiom, not Streamline yet, but I really do want to try the Pilot and might buy some tickets.
Their plastic is so good. Like, it feels so nice. If I didn't, like, this is like the hardest part about being a disc golfer is seeing like discs that you're like, I would love to throw that, but for some reason I can't part ways with something that does the exact same thing.
Yeah. So if you want to get your chance to win that disc for $1, you can head to dyersguild.co to enter that raffle. So you're listening to this now is when the raffle will start, and it will be live for 2 weeks. So you can find the link somewhere. I don't know where you're listening, but you can find it somewhere. But Brian, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. You had some interesting stories, and I hope someone learned something. Where can people find you at?
So you can find all my disc golf dies on my Instagram at felonbombdies. There's dots between those three words. That's where I'm going to post all my stuff. So that's probably the best place. And then on my Etsy shop, felonbombdies. That's where you can find all everything that I've made and everything that's available.
Fantastic. Well, if you haven't checked out felonbombdies' work, go check it out. It's pretty amazing stuff. And, if you want to buy some of his other discs, please do that. Even if you're a dyer, I find it interesting and fascinating to buy other dyers' discs just to kind of see how they actually did something. So, all right. Well, until next time, we will talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.